This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to talk now about privacy and your cell phone. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court has issued its first ever decision on cell phone privacy and criminal suspects. The court ruled that police do not need a warrant to search call logs on a suspect's cell phone following an arrest.
This case dates back to last year when police arrested Demetrius Pfeiffer in East Boston after they allegedly saw him get into a car with a known drug user and make a drug deal. They later arrested Pfeiffer, searched his cell phone, and found the drug user's numbers in the call logs. They never had a warrant.
Law enforcement officials praised the ruling, saying that investigators need rapid access to cell phone information to prosecute or even prevent violent crimes. Civil libertarians worry that Massachusetts may have just taken a step down the slippery slope to a future where police conduct warrantless searches, not just on your call logs, but your location data, texts, tweets, anything that's stored on your cell phone.
This is a hot topic across the country. Cases have been recently decided or are pending in at least a half dozen states, including Rhode Island, where a judge recently threw out cell phone evidence related to the death of a six-year-old boy. On the federal level, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act is ready for an overhaul. On the state level, civil libertarians plan to push several digital privacy bills in the next legislative session.
So we're going to dig into the issue right now. And joining us to do so is Carol Rose, the executive director of the Massachusetts ACLU. Carol Rose, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Also with us is Michael O'Keefe. He's the top prosecutor for the Cape and the Islands and president of the Massachusetts District Attorneys Association. Michael O'Keefe, welcome to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. So, Carol Rose, let me start with you. In the SJC's ruling, they wrote that officers had, quote, probable cause to believe the telephone's recent call list would contain evidence relating to the crime for which the suspect was arrested, and therefore the search of the call list in this case was a valid search. What's your first response to that?
Well, I mean, my first is that, the incident to arrest is really more semantics than reality. There's no question that a cell phone is really a closed container, and I think should be treated as such. But more than that, this case really shouts out, it's almost a plea from the judges to say we need direction from the state legislature and from the Congress as to what is and isn't appropriate for warrantless searching. Cell phones are different, and the court says things like it's an open question whether cellular telephone information is validly seized always, or at least generally, could be searched without a warrant. And they refuse to reach that broader question and say things like, I worry that misunderstandings may arise from this court's decision. That tells us that the law has yet to catch up with the technology, and this is a historic moment for us to put some laws into place to actually give us guidance to the courts and to the police on the fact that really warrants should be required when looking at people's cell phones.
Okay, so we'll come back to the potential expansion, whether it be the law catching up or how this law, judgment is used. But Mr. O'Keefe, let me bring you in here. As a prosecutor, as the head of the Massachusetts DA's Association, what's your response to the ruling?
Well, I guess I'm a little nonplussed by it in the sense that I just see it as an extension of a long line of cases here in Massachusetts as well as United States Supreme Court cases wherein and we even have a statute 276 section 1 here in Massachusetts that allows the police to seize the fruits and instrumentalities and other evidence of a crime for which an arrest has been made, and it's often referred to as the search incident to a lawful arrest exception to the warrant requirement. And so I agree with Carol with respect to the issue of the legislature attacking this issue of modern technology and the law catching up to it. I think that's something that we all agree on. And But I don't see this as a terribly groundbreaking decision, frankly.
Not a groundbreaking decision. Okay, well, let me ask you from the perspective of a DA, and in those moments when, you know, after law enforcement may arrest someone on suspicion of, you know, in this case, it was a suspicion of a drug deal, would the court had ruled the other way and said, no, you need a warrant to search on telephone call logs, do you think that would have been a hindrance to law enforcement?
You know, it's in the search incident to the lawful arrest exception upon which this decision is grounded, you know, speaks to the several different needs, if you will, during the course of an investigation. One is to seize evidence that can be destroyed by a defendant because it's seized arguably in his possession incident to the arrest, or to secure weapons that might be used to interfere with the arrest and harm the officers and things of that nature. And so, you are allowed to seize those things, but nothing more, anything more. And I think the court was very careful to make clear in this decision that we're talking about the call log that's readily available in the phone, not emails, not text messages, and not other data that might be contained mm-hmm. in the phone, for which you would need a warrant and therefore, in order to get the warrant, probable cause to make that a kind of an intrusion into the phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carol Rose, Patrick Murphy, who was the suspect Pfeiffer's attorney in this case, I mean, he is perhaps understandably not so happy with even this ruling from the SJC. He was quoted in the Boston Globe as saying, the court is allowing limited intrusions, but no one is around to watch the police. There are no protections whatsoever. He says that, quote, we don't want to leave the scope of a warrantless search to the police. I mean, do you share that concern?
Well, I mean, I think the real concern is, so if you draw the line where Mr. O'Keefe is suggesting it, well, we can look at the immediate call log data, but we can't look at the content and the text and the photos and all the other stuff that we keep on our cell phones, which is why they're so different than, say, the bag, the gym bag, which is the precedent case where they wanted to look at a gym bag. That's a very different thing because you do not know what the police are looking at, and that was what came up in the Rhode Island case, for example. But if you look at the law on the purpose behind the law on search incident to arrest, not requiring a warrant, that was it's to prevent destruction or concealment of evidence or removing of a weapon. Okay, now there's no way that a cell phone is going to have removing of the weapon. And in this case, there was no problem. Nobody raised the question of, say, an automatic deletion timer or something on the phone that would erase things. To the contrary, this is much more like property, like books or records, that you would need a warrant to go through. I don't think the police really needed to look at the call log in order to make the arrest. And I think this is evidence that probably should have been kept out. But that noted, I think we shouldn't get off the larger question of what should be the law about the ability of the police to search our cell phones or to use them as location tracking devices. And that's where we really are looking both to Congress, where there's a bill pending, and to the state legislature, where there's bills that are about to be introduced that would give some clarity so that people wouldn't have to worry about the police looking mm-hmm. at their cell phones and tracking them or looking at the content of their cell phones.
Well, listeners, we're talking about the Supreme Judicial Court's ruling on cell phone privacy and criminal suspects. The court has issued its first ever ruling in this matter, saying that law enforcement does not need a warrant when it's looking at a suspect's cell phone's call logs after an arrest. So listeners, do you think that police should or maybe shouldn't need that warrant when searching cell phones? Or do they lose critical time and perhaps the opportunity to investigate or even prevent crimes if they had to get a warrant? And if call logs are okay, what about texts, tweets, your location data? Where do you draw that bright line when it comes to cell phone privacy? And how do we balance that privacy with the needs of the law and law enforcement in the digital age? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment online at radioboston.org. Michael O'Keefe, let me ask you. So the cell phones are ubiquitous. Many of them, at least half of them out there, are smartphones in this day and age. They're incredibly important tools.
Mine's not that smart.
I didn't recently get a smart one until very recently, but there are numbers that say 50% of Americans have them. But I guess my question to you is, you know, where would you draw that bright line? Because as a person on the DA side, law enforcement side, it would seem to me that the more information you could gather, the better it is, or easier it is for you to pursue cases.
Yeah, right. But I'm a big believer in the warrant requirement, and I think most prosecutors are as well. The history of the Commonwealth is a long one of the protection of individual liberty. And, you know, our courts, the Supreme Judicial Court particularly, and I think the Great and General Court, are very quick to guard individual liberties. But there has to be a balance between the ability of a police to successfully interdict crime, detect crime, prosecute crime, and so we are constantly looking for that balance. And I think that, you know, during the upcoming years, legislatures, not only here in Massachusetts but across the country and the United States Congress, will continue to look at the marvelous new technological advances in communication that we have and try to fashion laws that strike that balance between the public safety and police's ability to investigate criminal activity and the individual's liberty and privacy interests in these devices. So, you know, that's a debate that we're not going to settle here, but, you know, will be settled over the course of time with deliberation and hearing from all sides, and I think that that's the appropriate thing to do.
If I might just jump in here, though, because it seems to me that in reading the SJC's ruling, as both you and Carol Rose have pointed out, while they have left the door open to future cases making their way through the system here in Massachusetts, at the end of the ruling, they've written, although an individual's reasonable expectation of privacy is diminished concerning his or her physical person when subject to a lawful arrest and taken into custody, the same may not necessarily be true with respect to the privacy of the myriad types of information stored in a cellular phone that he or she is carrying at the time of the arrest. Now, no one's asking, I'm not asking anyone to sort of look into the future and say, what will the SJC do? But they do seem to be hinting here that it's quite a complicated matter, and they may not be so willing to say warrantless searches for location data, for example, are okay.
Yeah, and I agree that that they can find this to a particular set of facts and a very narrow scope of what can be searched. You know, the call log that's, you know, readily apparent at the push of one button. Now, you know, some may argue that the pushing of one button is even too much, but, you know, that's the balancing test that, you know, will be fleshed out as we go further down the road with these devices. I have to believe that, you know, over time, we're going to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I guess I don't want to get too breathless about this issue. It's an issue that's going to take time, that broader question that Carol mentioned, to settle.
Well, Carol Rose, let me bring you back in here. I mean, at the federal level, there's no clear federal statute, and as far as I could find, and federal rulings in federal court around the country haven't been crystal clear or unanimous across the board either. So
right.
How far do we have to go here in Massachusetts to come up with some sort of perhaps legislative update to these rules?
Right. Well, there's, I mean, really two things. At the federal level in Congress, there's a bill that's has the last time we updated the Electronic Communications Privacy Act was in 1986. Needless to say, a lot has changed in technology. And that's actually going right now through the Senate Judiciary Committee, a bill that would sort of provide some protections. And, you know, if we don't pay attention, there may be warrantless searches of all sorts of cell phones and other kinds of devices. So it's important that people pay attention because that's a live issue right now. And the other thing, at the state legislative level, there will be legislation introduced in the coming legislative session that would, in fact, require law enforcement to obtain a warrant in order to access this kind of personal information from our telephone use or locations or contacts from telephone companies before they are able to get the access to that. So there needs to be a warrant requirement, and I'm thrilled to hear that DA O'Keefe is in favor of that because I think that is where the balance needs to be struck. It's not that hard in legitimate cases for the police to get a warrant. So that's the minimum that we should be requiring to make sure that we are able to have both public safety and liberty. You know, we can be both safe and free, and this is a place where we need to draw the line to protect against abuse.
Let's take a quick call here. Michael's calling from Somerville. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi. I worked for the SJC and then the Chief Justice of the trial court for over 20 years, and that led me to see our rights in a certain way. I also voluntarily served two combat tours in Vietnam with swift boats. All that time, I thought that our rights were there. Well, they were steadily eroded by, and not only eroded, some of them taken away with a gross motor change and by the so-called Patriot Act. And this is one more erosion. It's clearly a cell phone, even a smartphone, can't hold a weapon or drugs. So I can't see the reasoning.
Well, Michael, you heard Michael O'Keefe say that he doesn't think that we should be getting breathless about this because it's part of a process, both legislative and judicial, in dealing with the complexities of, you know, the devices that we're all carrying around in our pockets.
But what's the legislative process? That's to come, or it may not come, and who knows what little riders they're going to put on it that will be just one more erosion. A violation, I mean, unreasonable search and seizure. I mean, how can a phone be a weapon or hold drugs?
Michael,
well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a weapon or hold drugs. It can contain evidence of the crime, as it's alleged to have in these two cases about which the SJC opined, both Pfeiffer and Berry. And the, you know, the recent cell phone activity is very relevant evidence of the crime, and that not only does 276 Section 1, the statute, speak to evidence of the crime, but our longstanding sort of series of cases do as well. So it's not just weapons or contraband, it's also evidence of the crime of which recent telephone activity can certainly be.
Wanted to say thank you to Michael, the caller. And Michael O'Keefe and Carol Rose, if you could both please just stand by for a moment. I want to bring in briefly another voice into this conversation. He's Mark Rotenberg, and he's the executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, and he's a privacy law lecturer at Georgetown Law Center. He joins us today from Washington. Mark Rotenberg, welcome to you.
Thank you.
The reason why I wanted to chat with you a little bit is because it looks as if there are many cases across the country, from Rhode Island to Washington, Louisiana, Ohio, California, where decisions regarding cell phone privacy in criminal cases have been all over the map. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about Rhode Island, where text messages on a cell phone were used to bring a court case against a man in the murder of a six-year-old boy. That evidence was thrown out, and then you swing to the other end of the country in California, and the highest court in California has ruled that police can look through cell phones without a warrant as long as the phone was with the suspect at the time of the arrest. So where are we sort of going here nationally regarding cell phones and criminal cases?
Well, this is a very confusing area of the law, and as you said, courts have reached different outcomes. They're trying to draw analogies with other cases involving the containers, for example, and what rules might apply in the search incident to the arrest. But I think part of what the courts and also Congress is struggling with is the reality that the technology is evolving very rapidly. One thing that was remarkable to me about the case in Massachusetts is that it involved the old-style flip phone. It wasn't a smartphone, in fact. So the only information that was available to the police was essentially the call logs. And I think in that circumstance, it was fairly easy for the Supreme Judicial Court to say, well, if it's just the call logs and if it reveals information that's relevant to the purpose of the arrest, that seems like it would be permissible. But, of course, most people nowadays aren't walking around with those kinds of phones.
Also, I wonder about the nature of the information itself. I mean, now I'm officially a smartphone carrier, but is a call log that substantially different than the emails that are on my cell phone?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court, in fact, has suggested that it is different. There's a case back from the 1970s called Smith versus Maryland, and the U.S. Supreme Court said there that the numbers that you dial, unlike the contents of your communication, are not entitled to Fourth Amendment protection. Now, Congress subsequently looked at that and said, well, that doesn't seem quite right to us. And then by the 1986 law that Carol described earlier, actually created some protections for numbers that are dialed. So depending on as whether you look at it as a constitutional matter or statutory matter, you will actually find some privacy protections there. But certainly for the courts and for the Congress and for the state legislatures, there's going to be a need for some greater clarity.
Mm. I also wonder, I mean, there is the argument that especially with smartphones, and I take your point that it was maybe an old school flip phone in this Massachusetts case, but, for example, there are many people out there who say, with our smartphones or even phones of any kind, we should not have the expectation of privacy because the device is constantly sharing information back and forth with the network, with the carrier, so it's already been transmitted to a third party.
Well, certainly it's being transmitted, but I actually think most people, if they imagine the purpose of a communications device, even a smartphone, probably wouldn't concede that there's no expectation of privacy. They assume that their information is being transmitted for a particular purpose, because they've chosen, for example, to send a text message to one person, because they've decided to call another person, maybe even because they've posted something on Facebook that they want a whole group of people to see. But in each one of those situations, there is actually an expectation of privacy that the service provider is expected to comply with. And part of what the updates to the law are trying to do is basically to clarify, you know, if you send a text message to one person, you don't expect the service provider to go into that information or the police to get access to it unless there's, you know, a warrant or appropriate investigation.
Hmm. Carol Rose, you're the executive director of the ACLU here in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does it make you think when you hear, for example, that cell phone carriers, the Verizons and the AT&Ts of the world, responded to 1.3 million demands from law enforcement agencies for text messages and other information about subscribers just in 2011?
Right. I think it's incredible that people don't realize that that the telephone companies are collaborating with law enforcement and turning this data over, often without a warrant. And again, we need a warrant requirement. So there's a nexus to criminal law enforcement to prevent against abuse, to prevent against identity theft. And so what we need to do is to reform the laws to make sure that there is a warrant requirement so that people, once again, do have a reasonable expectation of privacy, so that all of the information that's in our cell phones, you know, it's not like a container. Think of all the things we do, our location, where we've been, who we talk to, who our friends talk to, what we've said to them. All of these things are in our smartphones, in our cell phones, to some extent even in our flip phones, and it should be protected. And certainly when we dial on hard lines, we don't think that AT&T and Verizon and all the telecom carriers are turning that information over without a probable cause search warrant. And there should be one, and we now have the opportunity, both in Congress and here in the Massachusetts legislature, to put those laws into effect.
Michael O'Keefe, we've just got a couple seconds to go, but last thought goes to you. Would you prefer sort of the legislature to show the way forward here in Massachusetts?
Well, you know, I think the development of the law is always one of the legislature and the courts pushing the envelope further in any given issue, and I don't think this will be any exception to that. And, you know, the devil is always in the details, and, you know, the cases that you mentioned from one side of the country to the other, which have disparate rulings, you know, these matters are very fact-specific, and you know, it may be that in a situation where something is found wanting, it's that the level of probable cause was simply insufficient. Mm. You know, so there are a myriad of things that go into a determination as to whether a seizure is legitimate or not. And, you know, we're going to, as I say, over time, discuss these things, weigh them in both legislative bodies and in appellate courts, and hopefully come to appropriate conclusions.
Well, Michael O'Keefe, District Attorney for the Cape and Islands, will leave today's discussion with that. Thank you so much. And Carol Rose, Executive Director of the Massachusetts ACLU, thank you to you as well.
Thank you.
And Mark Rotenberg with the Electronic Privacy Information Center, thank you as well. There's more of Radio Boston coming right up. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. We'll be right back.